and you're tuned to 96.3. Stay tuned for Bathrobs Piers Broadsides, the February 6, 2000 edition. We're going to have reports from Proposition 21 in Berkeley, protesting on the streets, an update on the censorship of the body and the explicit players in Berkeley as well, and here in Santa Cruz, updates on the City Council Tuesday meetings coming up, and the Homeless Issues Task Force on Monday, plus chock full of street interviews, and as a special edition, Pam Africa at the Board of Soups. Stay with us. Welcome to the Sunday version of Bathrobs Piers Broadsides. More time, more stuff, and more opportunity for phone calls here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're at 96.3 on your dial, as you probably noticed. And on your phone, if you want to reach us, you can just punch in 427-3772. That's 427-FRSC, short, of course, for Free Radio Santa Cruz. And we will talk to you and at you. Going to be doing numerous things today, as I mentioned before. Plus, we're going to start with a tape recorded on, I guess, 2 days ago up in San Francisco at the office of the Coalition on Homelessness, which puts out the homeless paper Street Sheet and has for a decade. They're fighting now to vote no on Proposition E coming up on the San Francisco ballot. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. It's not really directly related to us in terms of the fact we can't vote up there, but it does indicate what's going on in, let's say, the urban areas nearby. San Jose is actually bigger than San Francisco these days. It's kind of strange, but San Francisco, for me, is always the big city to keep an eye on. And indeed, it's the one big city that has a well-functioning homeless rights organization that puts out a monthly paper. Though there is talk in San Jose of a monthly homeless paper coming out, and indeed, I'm going to be going back to San Jose a week from Tuesday, actually, to go to the city council there and demand that they restore homeless services, that they stop sweeps of homeless people on the streets, that they fund programs that have gotten people out of homelessness. And as you know, about a week ago, a bunch of us were arrested in San Jose under the leadership of Scott Wagers of the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry, CHAM. We're going to be doing that again. But a quick look at San Francisco before we go on to this interview with Hugh Mejia of Food Not Bombs, which is what we're going to be listening to mostly for the next 20 minutes. Hugh Mejia, you'll be hearing him. But first, some of the background of Proposition E. I'm going to read you from the front page of the Street Sheet. Vote no on Proposition E, it just won't work. A crucial decision draws near for San Francisco voters. In March 2000, their vote will determine if 9,000 public cash assistance recipients keep their chins above water or sink deeper in the gloomy sea of poverty. Proposition E is the latest episode in a long history of dissing the homeless through punitive ballot measures, this time courtesy of ex-Human Services Commissioner and political wannabe Earl Reinerson. Proposition E would cut public assistance checks by 85%, replacing all but $55 monthly with, quote, vouchers for housing and services, but it doesn't ensure that the housing or services will actually exist. If it passes, Proposition E will ensure that 3,000 homeless people on public assistance remain homeless and could put another 6,000 who now have housing into our streets, all struggling to survive in a city transformed into a playground for corporate commuters, tourists, and the rich. Professional signature gatherers netted about a buck for each of the 16,000 signatures needed to place Proposition E on the March 2000 ballot. Signature collectors went into heavily populated commercial areas and outside food outlets such as Safeway and Cala, obtaining signatures and spreading misinformation about the intent of Proposition E. The pitch they used to gather signatures was based on falsehoods like all public assistance recipients are chronic drug users and alcohol dependent, that they're all homeless and on our streets because, quote, they use their cash assistance as an alcohol and drug allowance, and that most GA recipients aren't even from San Francisco. Negative stereotypes like these are geared to steer voters into believing that Proposition E is a humanitarian, positive reform to make homelessness non-existent, but they're simply just not true. By error or by design, Proposition E just won't work. Why is this? We all know there's a housing crunch in San Francisco. No real action is being made by the city, state, or U.S. government to address this critical lack of low-income housing. Proposition E would cripple public benefits recipients' ability to compete for housing by replacing cash with a $300 voucher. Low-income single-room occupancy hotel rooms cost an average of $460 monthly, and most SROs won't accept vouchers because of the increased overhead that comes with them. Landlords won't accept the voucher for a roommate's share of household rent from a roommate on public assistance. Why would any landlord waste time registering with the city to get reimbursed for some voucher in the tightest rental market in the U.S.? This could only result in putting thousands of people at extreme risk of eviction. Workfare workers who toil to keep our tourist-friendly city bright and shiny will also be affected by Proposition E. Keep in mind, these workers perform tasks such as keeping Muni sparkling clean or sweeping our streets for only a few dollars a day. They will be impacted tremendously because they are workers. That means they need all the little cash they have for laundry, grooming, and food. Some recipients have special dietary needs or medical needs that aren't covered by Medi-Cal, needs that can't be covered with a mere $50 a month. How Proposition E would affect the lives of public cash assistant recipients was the focus of a survey conducted by the Coalition on Homelessness. Many concerned recipients told us that this initiative would drastically change their lives for the worse. These are some of the basic questions that were asked. How would this proposal affect your life? How would this proposal affect your ability to exit poverty and or homelessness? What are some important points that need to be made to the public about this issue? And here are a few of our responses. The vouchers won't work. There's no housing or programs that exist for low-income and homeless people. This proposition will add to the thousands already living on the streets. Not all public cash assistance recipients use their cash as a stepping stone for alcohol and drugs. If you take that away, not only will homelessness and poverty stay where it is, it will increase drastically. This would affect my life drastically. Checks that are given out on the 1st and 15th of the month are not enough to make a decent life in San Francisco. I am a homeless man. This initiative would just make life simply harder. I would be affected simply because how can you budget $50 a month? That's just a small drop in a bottomless bucket. My life would be turned upside down. It would be a complete insult to assume that an individual could not use his financial assistance wisely. This seems to be a clear implication that cash recipients can't manage their money. This initiative would not help me exit homelessness. The initiative would leave me poorly groomed with unclean clothes, thus preventing one to find a job. My life would be affected very much by not giving me the chance to choose where to spend the money that is given to me, which is very important to me. Proposition E is communistic. We need financial freedom. You'd be surprised at the ambitions some GA and CAAP recipients have. I would exit back into homelessness. And there's more, and all this is in the February 2000 version of Street Sheet, which also has lots of other interesting articles. Some of them are in Spanish. For those of you who have Spanish-speaking friends or speak Spanish as your first language, and there's articles about the American criminalization of poverty, talks about the way the Giuliani's police are treating people in New York City. Lots of interesting stuff. If you like a copy of Street Sheet or the new Street Spirit, another San Francisco homeless paper, give a call to 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, that's 4833, acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the organization I belong to and that works to publicize abuses and to seek to restore civil rights to homeless people here in Santa Cruz. Again, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You can call actually while the show is going on. There should be somebody at the end of the line. They can talk to you about how to get either of these newspapers. Or if you have any other concerns, you think that we're also always taking input for this show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, which concerns itself with civil rights for the poor here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And if you don't want to be on the air, just give a call to 423-4833 and my producer will talk to you about anything you'd like to see on the air, possibly anonymously. If you do want to be on the air, however, you have an opportunity. If you call 427-3772, I will talk to you, and you will talk to the community. So think about doing that. And while you're thinking about that, I'm going to turn to this interview that I promised you. It is an interview conducted 2 days ago by myself, and I was speaking to Hugh Mejia. And Hugh is the sort of a man who really is up to snuff on Food Not Bombs. That's the organization that provides food for homeless people on the streets of San Francisco and actually in hundreds of other cities throughout the country and the world. They're not an organization that has any central organization. They're an idea that people have picked up in different places that food is wasted in mass quantities in this country and should be used. So Food Not Bombs prepares food from stuff that is left over but still good from grocery stores and other places, makes good hot vegetarian meals, and then serves these meals in public places where people can get them, not in some hidden away building on the outskirts of town where folks have to trek for 20 minutes to get there, but right downtown in the parks, and thus often Food Not Bombs faces persecution and harassment, and has, numerous times in the last few months in San Francisco, the police were cracking down. But let's get the update on this from Hugh Mejia.
February 4th, 2000, we're up here in San Francisco at about 20 to 2, Friday afternoon, talking to Hugh Mejia in the Coalition on Homelessness offices. Hi, Hugh.
Hi, Robert.
And Hugh, you're here in your sparse-looking office. Looks pretty slimmed down. Food Not Bombs, of course, has been your
specialty
area of expertise for, at least a decade? You've been a man on the video camera capturing all kinds of bizarre police behavior. Food Not Bombs, we know, got on the news this fall when there were numerous arrests and a threat to close down Food Not Bombs, followed by a hunger fast by numerous people, including religious figures like Sister Bernie Galvin and others like...
Sister Bernie was the primary and most well-known participant in that action. It lasted approximately 10 days, 2 weeks. There have not been any arrests or incidents of police harassment of Food Not Bombs San Francisco since November 1st of last year. So effectively, the police harassment has stopped.
And Food Not Bombs is continuing to serve in as high-profile a fashion as frequently as before?
I would say so. Right now it's serving about 5 to 8 times a week in United Nations Plaza, Golden Gate Park on Monday afternoons, and 16th and Mission on Monday afternoons.
Now, when I spoke with you and others at the Board of Supervisors in November, there was sort of talk afoot in this Amiano...
December, actually.
December?
Yeah, I think it was December.
In this Amiano subcommittee to, permit Food Not Bombs, meaning to issue a permit for Food Not Bombs, which some, I guess, were interested in and others were rather wary of. Where has that gone?
I don't think any further discussions or negotiations are being pursued at this point. Since the re-election of Mayor Brown and District Attorney Helen, and apparently we're back to where we were prior to the most recent wave of government harassment, the court order is still in place, unfortunately. But there isn't any harassment going on either, again, it's a matter of interpretation as to who were the primary instigators behind this last wave of harassment. But it looks to me that since Helen has been reelected and his policy is not to prosecute Food Not Bombs for free food distribution, it seems to me that the police and the city attorney's office aren't going to direct any more arrests of Food Not Bombs because they know that it's just basically a complete waste of time.
Now, in Los Angeles, we also heard of Food Not Bombs' victory after they initially were approached by, I guess, LAPD and
Park Police. Yeah, apparently Los Angeles Police and the Park Police were harassing and arresting Food Not Bombs in Los Angeles. Apparently, based on the reports I've seen, the American Civil Liberties Union in Los Angeles and Food Not Bombs in L.A. were able to successfully obtain a temporary or preliminary restraining order on the LAPD and the park police, and the federal judge who issued that order directed all the parties involved to negotiate some type of arrangement out of court. I don't know what the current status of their negotiations is at this point, but apparently the arrests have stopped.
I know that this was happening in Pershing Park, and somehow it involved some ICE escapades or some such thing.
Right, apparently the Pershing Square Park in downtown L.A. was being temporarily converted into an ice skating rink, and one of the pretexts that the police had for harassing the LA Food Alliance group was supposedly their free food distribution activities were interfering with the use of the park as an ice skating rink.
Luckily, the judge showed the police that they were, shall we say, skating on thin ice.
Yes.
Now, have there been any other reports elsewhere in the country of Food Not Bombs suffering repression, harassment, or something of the sort?
Not that I can think of. I know that some Food Not Bombs people in Cleveland, Ohio, were involved in and got arrested in protest against the implementation of very aggressive anti-homeless, anti-public camping, anti-public sleeping laws in Cleveland, Ohio. I don't think the Cleveland group, though, has gotten arrested for free food distribution.
You know, in the past couple of years, there's been kind of occasional stories about Food Not Bombs expanding, although it doesn't expand as an organization, the idea, I guess, of Food Not Bombs and autonomous groups in different countries spring up. Has that been continuing to happen?
Yes. Within, for example, the past 2 years, we've gotten reports of people trying to start Food Not Bombs groups in places such as Malaysia. There are two groups in Brazil, one in Belo Horizonte and Sao Paulo. They call themselves Food in Action. There's also been interest expressed in Argentina in starting a Food Not Bombs group there. There are a number of active Food Not Bombs groups in Europe. Recently, in fact, two people from the Cologne, Germany Food Not Bombs group visited us and gave a presentation at the Long Hall in Berkeley back in September of last year. One of them was active with the Food Not Bombs group in Cologne, Germany. The other one was active with Anti-Racist Action in Germany. And they gave a very interesting video and slide presentation about Food Not Bombs and about anti-racist action.
Now, I know also, am I interrupting? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Excuse me. Sorry. There's been some interesting, there were some interesting avenues that Food Not Bombs was pursuing in its attempt to gain legitimacy, or shall I say, to redress human rights abuses. For example, one of them, and you're quite familiar with this since you were, I guess, the lead person, was an appeal to the United Nations. Another was an appeal to Amnesty International. You want to tell us the status of those two avenues?
Sure. Since at least January of 1994, the United Nations Human Rights Commission in Geneva has taken an interest in the police and government harassment of Food Not Bombs. Their particular investigation procedure is, for the most part, secret and not really a matter of public record. All they've done, basically, is acknowledge the fact that they've been receiving documentation and affidavits and videos from us and other people that have submitted it on our behalf to them.
Although Karen Parker did appear with us at the Board of Supervisors in December to challenge harassment of Food Not Bombs.
Karen Parker is an international human rights attorney and expert who works on a lot of different human rights cases on the behalf of various people from throughout the world, as well as representing people in the U.S. who seek political asylum here from countries like, say, El Salvador or Burma or Pakistan. Karen has helped to present the Food Not Bombs case to the United Nations, although, again, her knowledge of the exact status of that case is limited because it is a secret procedure. Basically, the only people who really know the full extent of the UN investigation are either UN officials or diplomats of other countries.
And unfortunately, they've all been cut off because of the lack of funding for the UN.
Yes. This is a whole other facet to this. See, what's very interesting about the fact that the UN has taken the Food Not Bombs case is it is being used as one of many outstanding issues to gain political leverage within the UN against the U.S., because the U.S. is $1 billion in arrear in its dues to the United Nations. It is pretty much U.S. foreign policy, particularly the position of the most reactionary and conservative elements of our government, people like Jesse Helms, that either want the U.S. out of the U.N. entirely, or basically only want the U.N. to be a tool of U.S. foreign policy, and only want the U.N. to support so-called U.S. peacekeeping operations that are really pretexts for military intervention in other countries. Needless to say, people like Helms are totally against the U.N.'s nominally or sensibly liberal policies in foreign aid or promoting multiculturalism or supporting birth control. In fact, as you may know, recently Helms actually addressed the General Assembly and chided the UN for contradicting or deviating from U.S. foreign policy. So the Food Not Bombs case, along with a number of other cases, such as, for example, the case of Native American Indian activist Leonard Peltier, as well as a number of cases of police brutality, of conditions in state and federal prisons, such as Pelican Bay Security Housing Unit, have been investigated by the UN Human Rights Commission. Some of their findings have been made public. And a number of other international human rights groups, such as Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, in recent years have been really scrutinizing the very serious problems that we have with prison conditions, with the very selective, arbitrary, racist, and classist use of the death penalty.
Wait a minute now. Prisons, of course, are the homeless shelters of tomorrow. And
yes.
The death penalty is, of course, the final solution to the homeless problem.
Yes. And a number of people, I mean, both human rights groups as well as political organizations in other countries, as well as just private citizens of the world, are really appalled at the really poor and deteriorating human rights record of the U.S., both in its foreign and domestic policies. For example, Amnesty International initiated an international campaign, its first ever, on human rights violations in the U.S. It's very interesting. I should get you a copy of the report on that. It didn't get a lot of coverage in the U.S. It did get a lot of coverage outside the U.S. Amnesty International, along with other human rights groups, organized demonstrations in places like Pakistan at U.S. embassies.
Yeah, really.
Which I think shows just how bad this country is getting. If you can have a demonstration about human rights violations in a quasi-military dictatorship like Pakistan, it makes you question just how egregious human rights violations are in the U.S. There were demonstrations in Athens. There was extensive coverage on television in Sweden. For two consecutive days, there were front page articles in newspapers in Helsinki about this. The U.S. government was so embarrassed that actually they invited, in one case, the Amnesty International section in Japan before the Japanese contacted them and met with Amnesty International representatives in Japan. At the U.S. Embassy in Tokyo back in the fall of 98. The U.S. had to take a lot of heat. Amnesty International has five areas that they're focusing on in their campaign on the U.S., including police brutality, prison conditions, and also, and this ties in too with U.S. foreign policy, they're now taking a look at the U.S. government's role in oversight, or failing to oversee, really, how defense contractors and security industries have basically been accomplices, if not in fact promoting and aiding third world dictatorships through intentionally, if not through...
Not to mention first world dictatorship.
Mm-hmm. But how U.S. arm manufacturers and how the U.S. government have basically been either turning a blind eye, if not in fact aiding and abetting third world dictatorships by very generously exporting, you know, weapons of mass destruction, which of course the U.S. always criticizes Iraq for, but we never criticize countries like, say, Indonesia or other types of dictatorships that we've been in the same bed with, or various types of like prison control technologies. I mean, things like ranging from neurotoxins and pepper spray and electric batons and various other technologies that are used here in our prisons are being exported abroad to third world dictatorships, well, like Mexico and Nigeria.
Speaking of prisons, here on the streets of San Francisco, you have been kind of sparing some homeless people the thrill of going into the local cells or being subjected to warrants for not paying fine tickets by essentially getting tickets dismissed through the Coalition on Homelessness. Mm-hmm. This was a process that I guess some feared was going to be derailed by the election of District Attorney Fazio. Mm-hmm. He wasn't elected. Instead, as you point out, Terrence Hallinan was. But what about the general prospect of an injunction stopping the enforcement of life-sustaining behavior criminalization, such as sleeping? Mm-hmm. We in Santa Cruz have been talking about this. I know something like that was attempted around Matrix in the early 90s, and I guess the Joyce decision came down badly, but was appealed, and this again was held moot, I believe, although I guess we have to talk to Adam about that, your local attorney. Any thoughts on that? Anything, chance of a revitalization of that kind of a lawsuit?
Right. Again, I think you should talk with Adam in the Coalition's Civil Rights Division. He would be more knowledgeable about this. It seems to me, based on my readings of what I pick up in the corporate media and off the internet, is that, just a quick overview here, the so-called quality of life matrix, anti-homeless, anti-public nuisance law enforcement programs that were initiated here in San Francisco back in the mid and early 90s and are being replicated, as you probably know, in New York under the Giuliani administration, are being replicated or mimicked in other parts of the U.S., like Cleveland, like Los Angeles, like Seattle, like San Francisco.
Arizona has successfully overthrown a sit ban recently.
Yes. I mean, you do see the problem that's going on here is that these things are apparently or seemingly being initiated at the local level, at the city, county, to a certain extent possibly at the state level. There doesn't seem to be any real comprehensive federal policy about how to, quote, deal with homeless people or public nuisance issues, unquote. And unfortunately, to date, we haven't really tried to challenge these comprehensively on a federal level, although, you know, there have been at the federal district level challenges to Matrix here in San Francisco.
Although the successful lawsuit in Miami in the early 90s produced, under the Pottinger decisions, produced, safe areas for homeless people in Miami and kind of copycat safe areas, even in areas outside the jurisdiction of that federal district in other Florida cities for fear there would be similar lawsuits. Mm-hmm. And then an expansion of social services when the sight of so many homeless people in a visible place began to shock the sensibilities and folks felt they had to move for social services. Ironically, a kind of you might even say reverse effect. Some might say there would be a mass of hostility or a reaction of hostility to homeless people being so visible. But in fact, if it was hostility, it was translated into the form of increased social services and indeed, a tax to support that in Florida. I just wanted to interject.
And I'm glad you did. It seems you're just as knowledgeable, if not more knowledgeable, about some of this than I am. It's hard to track it all. I mean, there's a lot of this stuff going on at the local, regional level. It's hard for me to track it all. Tying it in with what we were talking about earlier about what actions have been taken on the international level against the U.S. government, because of these problems, the U.S. government's inability to deal with homelessness, in fact, if not its open criminalization of the homeless, because of police brutality, because of the arbitrary and racist use of the death sentence. By the way, one good item of news, as some of you may be aware of, just recently, the governor of Illinois decided to issue a moratorium on the death sentence. So
I saw that.
It looks like some of these petitions to international human rights groups and some of these protests are actually starting to pay off a little bit.
Plus the number of people, innocent people, that they found on death row in the last decade or
so. Shocking. It's just shocking how many innocent people get convicted sentenced and executed. It's really appalling. In fact, in the state of Texas, the local and state prosecutors had the honesty and or arrogance to admit that they know for a fact that there have been several instances where innocent people have been executed.
Any stats on the number of people on death row who've been homeless? Has that survey ever been done?
Good question. I don't know of any figures. I'm sure that a significant number of people on death row have experienced homelessness at some point in their lives. I don't know if anybody has exact figures.
There are probably figures on the income levels for people on death row. I think it's generally agreed that if you're wealthier and you have better legal representation, your odds of getting on death row are much less.
Right. I suspect that's quite true. Anyway, just a quick overview here. Because of these really atrocious violations of basic human rights standards, Clinton, for example, back in December of 1998, actually did issue a federal directive and presidential order asking the Department of Justice, the Department of State, the Congress, the Senate, and even, interestingly enough, the Department of Defense and the Joint Chiefs of Staff to immediately and fully enforce all of the international human rights treaties that the U.S. government has ratified, which is very interesting. That was done like 2 months after Amnesty International initiated its campaign on the United States. I don't know if there's a direct cause and effect relationship, but I think there may very well have been.
Now, some folks in Santa Cruz have been suggesting, since local authorities down there continue to enforce the $54 mm-hmm. per sleeping ban, mm-hmm. Cover up with a blanket after 11 o'clock, another $54, or just harass people based on those laws and drive mm-hmm. them into unsafe areas, resulting in a huge number of assaults on homeless people mm-hmm. because they're both unsafe areas and also because they're afraid to use the police for any kind of protection.
Right.
Because they're afraid they have warrants out, they're afraid police are hostile to them, and so forth. Because of all this, there's been a concern that since there doesn't seem to be redress at the local legislative level, the city councils and the board of supervisors, because there doesn't seem to be redress at the local judicial level, municipal courts, even superior court, or possibly even at the state level, while you have the ICORN decision, mm-hmm. which allows the use of the necessity defense and was successfully apparently used mm-hmm. over in Albany, mm-hmm. in the East Bay, where they were showing that people were being evicted and then criminalized once they were evicted by the city and then told, go to Berkeley because they have services,
yeah,
but
yeah.
we don't. But because there doesn't seem to be any redress locally or even at the state level, a federal kind of response even is a possibility. We've talked about that, mm-hmm. and since it's been successful in Pottinger. I think there have been settlements in Atlanta and in mm-hmm. Texas that have told the police department, here are the new standards. You cannot criminalize people for life-sustaining mm-hmm. misdemeanors without going through a whole series of processes. Are the shelters full? Mm-hmm. Things of this sort. But some folks have said, why not appeal higher? Why not mm-hmm. take these issues directly to the World Court? Mm-hmm. We saw the World Court's decision on the rights of gay people lead the British government recently mm-hmm. to decriminalize
right.
Sexual preference.
Right. One correction on that. I believe that decision wasn't made by the World Court. It was made by the
European Court, I believe.
Right. I believe it was the European Community's Human Rights Commission.
Which we're not a party to, right?
Which the United States is not a party to. The World Court, as you mentioned, or the so-called International Court of Justice that is based in The Hague in the Netherlands, normally its mandate allows it only to deal with cases between governments. It doesn't normally get directly involved in cases that are, quote, internal or domestic affairs of one particular nation. So it's not normally from the jurisdiction of the International Court of Justice to hear a case and try to take action on a case that involves only parties within any given single country. So, for example, the homeless of the United States wouldn't have legal standing to seek action against the U.S. federal government or state governments in the International Court of Justice. Unfortunately, that is not realistically a viable option. Now, something that has been discussed, although, again, due to lack of resources and or knowledge of how to do this, one possibility, and this is something to think about, would be, of course, in an increasingly international globalized world that we live in.
Go to the WTO, right?
Well, now here's an interesting analogy. Just as you have the WTO that's ostensibly trying to promote free trade and break down national barriers, one could argue, and it is a possibility if you have the resources to do this, that the U.S. government, at least in principle, if not legally, is obligated to recognize the right to food and shelter of each and every person, whether they be a citizen or not. And a number of people, in fact, a number of the people that that eat at Food Not Bombs are not U.S. citizens. They may be from countries like Mexico, El Salvador. Indeed, we've even, you know, come across homeless or low-income people from Eastern Europe or Russia or the Far East that are either recent immigrants or are here legally or illegally.
Give them a free lunch and they'll come, man. You've got to find some way to keep these bombs up.
Exactly. Well, the case in point, to make a long story short here, is that particularly in cities like San Francisco or New York or Los Angeles, you've got people from all over the world that may at one point in their lives end up being homeless. One thing that could be argued that may give a standing in the International Court of Justice is that the homeless are in fact an international community. You might be able to get representatives or diplomats from other countries interested in this, and in fact, if several different countries, such as, say, for example, Brazil and Mexico and Sweden were to be interested in this, they could possibly legally introduce an action against the U.S. government through the International Court of Justice. Now, what Food Not Bombs and other groups did was not go through the International Court of Justice, they went through the UN Human Rights Commission. That's an entirely different channel.
And we still don't know what's going on because of the secret process.
Because it is secret. And the other thing, too, to make a long story short, is that the way that works is, unfortunately, all of the Security Council members that also sit on that commission, U.S., Russia, Britain, France, China, have veto power. So although we do have a standing case to actually take it before the full commission and then try to seek sanctions against the U.S.,
the U.S. is unlikely to support this against itself.
And now other countries have been quite supportive. Based on what I've been told by Karen Parker, for example, Cuba at one time and also Ethiopia at one time were sitting on the UN Human Rights Commission. The representatives of Cuba and Ethiopia were quite sympathetic to Food Not Bombs.
Of course, they are traditionally hostile to many U.S. foreign policy initiatives, so this may be simply a thin ploy by Fidel and, I don't know, is it Mengistu or is he gone? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure who the current leader is in Ethiopia. But there were a number of countries that were quite sympathetic to the Food Not Bombs case. China, in fact, publicly in the spring 1997 open session of the UN Human Rights Commission, the Chinese government representative, among other cases, cited the Food Not Bombs case as an example of human rights violations in the United States. So we know that there are several countries that have been quite sympathetic to Food Not Bombs and have supported the Food Not Bombs case at the UN Human Rights Commission. But again, the problem is, for a final favorable ruling and for that ruling to result in sanctions, it would require the U.S. to either not veto or abstain, and that's, of course, is unlikely. But at least that case, to the best of my knowledge, still stands, along with a lot of other things that the UN has been investigating, including you know, the plight of Native Americans, etc.
We've been talking to Hugh Mejia, who is a worker both with Food Not Bombs and the Coalition on Homelessness here in his native habitat at the Coalition on Homelessness. Any final words, Hugh?
I think I've said enough for now, Robert.
Thank you very much.
Here's a song about Hazard, Kentucky. Well, some people think that unions are too strong. Union leaders should go back where they belong. But I wish that they could see a little more poverty and they might start to sing a different song. Well, let's look at old Kentucky for a while. It is hard to find a miner who will smile. Well, the Constitution's fine, but it's hard reading in the mines. And when welfare stops, trouble starts to pile. Well, mining is a hazard in Hazard, Kentucky. And if you ain't mining there, well, my friend, you're awful lucky. Cause if you don't get silicosis or pay that's just atrocious, you'll be screaming for a union that will care. Well, the Depression was ended with the war. But nobody told Kentucky, that is sure. Some are living in a sewer while the jobs are getting fewer. But more coal is mined than ever was before. Well, mining is a hazard in Hazard, Kentucky. And if you ain't mining there, you're awful lucky. Cause if you don't get silicosis or pay that's just atrocious, you'll be screaming for a union that will care. Well, the badge of Sheriff Combs always shines, and when duty calls, he seldom ever whines. Well, I don't like raising thunder, but it sort of makes you wonder when he runs the law and also runs the mines. Of course, and, well, our standard of living is the highest all around, but our standard of giving is the lowest when you're down. So give a yell and give a whistle when they light that Union missile, and we'll all lift our feet up off the ground. Mining is a hazard in Hazard, Kentucky. And if you ain't mining there, you're awful lucky. If you don't get silicosis or pay that's just atrocious, you'll be screaming for a union that will care.
And there's a singer that helped folks to care, Phil Oakes. And we're playing some of the older cuts, some of which have never seen the light of day, so to speak. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I'm Bathrop's peer Robert Norris for the next couple hours till 1:30. Stay with me as much as you can, and come a little closer. Call in at 427-3772. We have open lines if you want to talk about anything you've heard. That was a long interview with Hugh Mejia of the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, also a Food Not Bombs worker, talking about the struggles of Food Not Bombs to get court cases heard in international forums, where here in the local and in the state and federal forums, they don't get much of a fair shake. I know that Food Not Bombs co-founder Keith McHenry was beaten repeatedly by police over the years and jailed over 100 times, once for a felony charge for having possession of milk crates, and he couldn't get anywhere in these courts. Here's an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi. Hi, it's Jim, a.k.a. S. Megma.
Go ahead, Jim.
That's some amazing folk cuts. How did you come by those?
I'm sorry, what was amazing?
I'm sorry, I have a stuff in my throat.
That's okay.
Those are amazing old Phil Oakes cuts that I've never heard.
Yeah, there are going to be some more coming up. Just keep tuned. Yeah, these are from Mark Levy, who's our local kind of the carrying on the tradition of Phil Oakes. He's written a lot of folk songs, and I'll actually be playing.
And he collects tapes or something?
Yeah, well, he knows the Oakes family.
Oh.
And he got these from, Phil Oakes' sister when he was in New York City. They're both from New York. And I'm actually going to be playing one of his tunes next from his new album, Born to be Wired, Mark Levy's album.
Looking forward to it.
Which he wrote here for about Santa Cruz. It's called No Sittin' in Santa Cruz, and you could equally say No Sleepin' in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, so I actually was hoping to be able to connect with you, because I want to go to this next meeting and talk about the fact that I got mugged by the skinheads.
I think you may have mentioned that on the air before. I'm not sure. Have you mentioned it? I think you probably
have. I'm pretty sure I have at some point.
Right. A lot of us are concerned about the violence against homeless people. And, of course, if those have been reading the paper, you may have noticed in the last week it's been two or three deaths, one of them apparently a homicide, in the county, that includes Watsonville, of homeless people. And it's really, it's a continuation of what was documented last year reluctantly by the police chief. Well, we documented it at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, early on, and we've been trying to got the Homeless Issues Task Force to talk about it before the city council, and of course they had no response about setting up safe sleeping zones, except of course the community responded when Mike Schmidt, CEO of the Chamber of Commerce, unexpectedly and out of the blue came out with an immediate proposal for safe sleeping zones for homeless people, and ran around, started pushing that at the Harvey West Neighborhood Association, came to the Homeless Issues Task Force himself, went to his own executive committee of the Chamber of Commerce, and of course, still not a word from the City Council. We have a City Council meeting coming up on Tuesday, and there's nothing on their agenda.
Right.
That doesn't have anything to do with what you were talking about, but hey, them's the risks of calling in on my show.
It's your show, guy.
Hey.
And believe me, I'm learning about activism from you, and you're a smart activist, and that guy in San Francisco. Like, I just love seeing that. Like, activists who, like, really know exactly what's going on.
Well, some of us sound like we do, but if we really knew what were going on, hopefully we could be changing it. That's the key.
Right, but I mean, compared to not just even the average person, but compared to 99% of the people, you know, you've pretty much got your no one person could be on top of all of it, but you've got your fingers pretty close to being on the pulse of it. You know, it does my heart very much good, because this is a wacky world that makes me very uncomfortable to even be living in it.
Right.
You know, without knowing that there are sane, compassionate people, you know, really putting their asses on the line, getting arrested, and, you know.
Well, I appreciate that.
I appreciate it very much.
Anything you want to add about Oaks or anything else?
Anything about Oaks? Goodness. Not really. I don't know that much. I just know, like, I ain't a marching anymore.
Oh, yeah. Great song. We'll play some more of them for you.
Great.
All right.
I'm enjoying it. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we will. We've got a whole tape of them, and we're going to work through them from beginning to end. Here's another call, however.
Free Radio here.
Hi. Hi, this is Dan Hopkins.
Hi, Dan.
How you doing today?
Good. And for those who don't know you, of course, you are the man who spent 7.5 months in front of...
...4 hours against the homeless... sleeping ban,
uh-huh.
And I was there 24 hours with no food, no coffee, no water, and no sleep. And it was cold. There was a wind chill factor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really traumatic.
Did Mayor Sugar come out and offer you a blanket?
Oh, no. He won't talk to me.
The mayor won't talk to you?
No.
Why not?
I don't think he likes me because I took a stand on some issue and it was against what he wanted, you know?
But Mayor Sugar returns all his phone calls.
He does? Funny.
No, actually, he doesn't. That's the trouble. He hasn't returned mine in, I guess, about a year now. And
oh.
He hasn't returned those of other people who I've spoken to.
No.
He's a difficult man to reach, and it's too bad because in many issues he's got his head on straight. He respects the civil liberties of young people. He tried to turn back the shoulder tap law.
Right.
You know, he made a few good moves on the sleeping ban a year ago until Catherine Byers and Mike Rotkin and John Barisoni, the city attorney, shut him down.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, you know, he's decided he doesn't have the votes to change the sleeping ban or even to talk about setting up safe zones. One would have thought that with Mike Schmidt running around getting the Chamber of Commerce rolling, that the city council wouldn't want to be far behind the Chamber of Commerce on this issue. But apparently they aren't acting at all. At least I've seen nothing on the upcoming Tuesday agenda. There are two city council meetings on Tuesday. One is at 3 o'clock and one is at 7, the afternoon session and the evening session. And there's also an important session, by the way, of the Redevelopment Agency, which is the city council sitting as the body that, you know, eminent domains and builds supposedly affordable housing. And that's at 5 o'clock at city council. And the issue coming up there has to do with Dolphin Lee, which, you know, I've been talking about a lot. I'm going to talk about that more, too. The two apartment buildings in the beach flats that are going to be razed and all the people there evicted, supposedly to be relocated back into a new spiffy building later on. And that, of course, is the real question, whether that can actually happen. And folks who live in that area and who've been studying it for a long time say, no way that's going to happen. Just like with the Neary Lagoon project, there's going to be glittering promises made, and most of the people are just going to disappear into the woodwork. A few will get in, but certainly not all, and probably not a majority.
Yeah, I agree with you. No way. Those people are going to be long gone before they get buildings up over there, you know.
But, you know, at least Catherine Byers will be able to go back to the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom and say that she built an affordable housing project, even though that created a lot of suffering and relocation and dislocation for those who whose building she had razed, had torn down.
Yeah, you did ask a question about if any of the council persons did come to me. They actually did come by me, you know, and wave to me. A couple of them waved sort of in agreement with my fast or something. You know, they seemed like they were much friendlier than usual, you know.
Did they throw peanuts?
Well, actually, Catherine Byers was very nice to me as she went by, you know.
How nice.
And she talked to me and everything. And she offered if I needed anything, but I told her I didn't want no food or
maybe
water.
Maybe we should send Mary over to Catherine Byers' house. You remember Mary? Mary is a 74-year-old woman who we've had on the air recently who's about to be evicted. She'll be getting her sheriff's notice probably in a day or two.
Oh, no.
5-day notice. She's 74 years old. She has a number of conditions.
Oh, God.
And she's gone to Sugar, and Sugar's sent her to a couple of different agencies. She
hang on a second. Somebody came to the door here. Hold on. Okay, go ahead.
Sure.
Keep talking.
So, it's interesting to hear, Dan, that you're pushing to end, as all of us are, of course,
uh-huh.
I think, or at least many of us are.
Oh,
help.
I need to go in there? Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You need to get off. I can let you go.
I better let you go. But I did want to say that, with all the people that are going to be fasting this month, I think there's 40 of us, I think it will make an impact,
That's great. Well, I sure hope so.
Okay, all right, I better let you go. I have to leave right now because I'm at work.
Okay.
Okay, all right. We'll see ya.
And there's a working man, a working homeless man, by the way, who spent a day out fasting, going without sleep, and publicly sitting out in front of City Hall, where, as I said, in 1996, he was there for 7.5 months, along with dozens of other people, mostly 2 or 3 at a time, but he was really the mainstay, the linchpin, along with Sean Alimi, who died tragically a year and 3 months ago in an auto accident. The two of them and others supporting them tried to bring the conscience of the city into a position where it could receive some homeless input, and I think the city probably heard them in some respects, but the city council did not, and that includes the very well-mannered Catherine Byers, who was so nice to Dan, but apparently not nice enough to allow for homeless people to sleep at night somewhere, because that was the proposal she successfully sabotaged a year ago with her task force to examine the camping ordinance. And then as mayor, of course, she essentially deep-sixed reports from her own $10,000 homeless issues task force, and that was followed by Mayor Keith Sugar, currently our mayor, who refused to discuss these issues at city council publicly, who refused to respond to the Homeless Issues Task Force's midterm report and its concerns about violence and need for safe zones, and who has maintained a complete silence on the issue of safe zones in spite of, as I said before, public cries for it. In terms of his own Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women has asked for an end to the sleeping ban, the Community Action Board has asked for an end to the entire camping ban, Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which essentially ran the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program for years and got together funding and proposals for Community House, the new Page Smith Community House, which serves 40 homeless people, and now essentially is a sort of a dead letter document, kind of a piece of paper in the drawer of the Homeless Resource Center, because it was abandoned by Catherine Byers' machinations. Not that I have a lot of positive things to say about the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. I was always at odds with them, but even they favored ending the camping ban. And again, if you don't favor ending, if you have ideas that there are going to be people sleeping everywhere and anywhere, which is, of course, the false impression given by sleeping ban supporters like Mike Rotkin, you should know that the current initiative being circulated is a safe sleeping ban, a safe sleeping zone, and decriminalization of sleep proposals are making the rounds. David Silva is making the rounds of that proposal. And we just heard Dan Hopkins talking about the fast. That's what's going on this month to help support that proposal and support a real change for safe sleeping zones. I see a caller called in and then sort of disappeared on me. Caller, I'm sorry, I may not have noticed your call coming up on the board. Please call back, and we'll try and put you on the air. And that applies to anybody who's interested in getting to be a part of this conversation. It's 427-3772 to call Free Radio Santa Cruz here at 96.3. We're going to be going for another hour and a half, and perhaps it's apropos or appropriate to play a little bit of this press conference. This is David Silva and others working to put some moral force. I guess they wouldn't say they're trying to pressure the city council. I would perhaps say that, and I hope they do. But they're simply expressing their outrage and concern. I think that some of them would say this, some of them would say different things, by the so-called progressive and rolling fast. A rolling fast means one person does the fast one day, another person takes it up the next day, a third person takes it up a third day, and each of them calls the city council and informs them that they've gone without food or gone without sleep for 24 hours. You can be a part of this process if you want. You can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Or I believe if you really want to be a part of the fast and not simply get information, because David himself is fasting and in weakened condition himself. He's missing, I believe, now two meals a day, every day. Last month it was one meal. This month it's two meals. And next month he will be fasting, going off solid food completely, I believe, in March. Quite a commitment for David, because he is himself suffers from AIDS and has to take all kinds of medications. And it's a matter of some concern to a lot of us, because it may be that some people, I don't want to say they will, no one has said they're into suicide here, but it may be that some people may suffer serious health consequences from this fast in order to get the issue to the public and to the community. If you want to give a call to volunteer for the fast, you can call 429-5284. But if you just want more information about it, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we'll field the call there, because we're not fasting. Hey, I'm eating more these days, I'll tell you. I did plan to do one day of fasting, and will. I planned to do it January 31st, and then unfortunately I was doing something else. I admit it publicly, but I hope maybe I can fast for 2 days to make up for it. The idea, again, is to get as much broad community input to end the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, or at least to establish safe sleeping zones. There's an initiative, as I said, which is being circulated throughout the city. Am I missing the phone again? My goodness. I may have to turn on the ringer shortly. Keep calling in, folks. I will pick up the phone eventually. I will keep staring at this flasher, and the next person that calls, I guarantee you go on the air immediately. There is an initiative being circulated, and here's a caller, and true to my word.
Hi, caller.
Hello.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Yes, I know.
Sorry to take
That's
so
okay. Long. Oh, actually, no, I just called in. There must have been other people calling in before me.
Oh, okay, good.
I have a baby, and I was wondering if they're going to do another, especially Dan, if Dan is going to be doing another fasting in front of the city hall. Mm-hmm. I think I'd like to go, although I can't promise that I'll be fasting because I've got a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be willing to sit out there with my baby overnight, which might, you know, pull some heartstrings.
Right, and it also might pull some some tickets, since it's illegal to have a blanket after 11 o'clock at night, even if you're awake. So be advised.
What if I have a baby, right, in a stroller, and I put the blanket on her in her stroller? Are they going to arrest her for having a blanket in the
stroller? Frankly, I think not. I think that would be probably the worst thing they could do, and I don't think they would do that. The point you can make is that it is technically illegal for any human being, small, large, or otherwise, to cover up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night. And I think that would be a great thing to do if you're up for doing it.
Yes, I would be up for doing it, especially with Dan. He's a very, very wonderful person.
I think so, too. And I, in all candor, I've not heard of blanket tickets being issued since 96, maybe 97. So I think you'd be okay, even if you fell asleep. I doubt that they would arrest your baby who's asleep, though. It would be technically illegal. You cannot have a human being. It's illegal for a person to be awake after 11 o'clock at night outside. That's considered to be criminal behavior.
Right.
Even though, there is no way near adequate shelter. The shelter for 20% at most of homeless people in winter and 5% in summer.
Right.
Well, let me give you a number to call so you can get in touch with Dan.
Okay, actually, I can find him. What I'd like to try to propose to mm-hmm. any listeners is getting like a mass of people
mm-hmm.
to do this together.
Great.
Instead of it just being, you know, Dan or Dan and myself.
Mm-hmm.
If there's other people that are interested, then like maybe we can. And actually, that would be a good idea for you to give the number, because then it will go out over the air as well. And anyone else who's interested could do that.
Do you have an answering machine yourself or a phone?
Actually, I do have both.
Maybe what we could do is, if you're up for it, we could give your name and number and have folks call you directly.
That sounds great.
What's your name?
My name is Martha Hollis.
Hey, Martha.
And you know me.
I think You met me
at a SCAN conference.
Oh, yeah, of course.
At Cabrillo.
You were one of the folks who effectively provided input for a kind of a counter conference that happened in October.
That was such a wonderful conference, too.
That was the, what was it called, Common Action, I believe?
Yeah, I think, it was something
that. That was at the Veterans Hall.
Right. They had great food.
What's your number, Martha?
469-3455.
Mm-hmm. So Martha at 469-3455 is inviting all of you who want to, I guess, are you talking about reconstituting the City Hall Sleepers protest? Is that what you're thinking of? Or?
Yeah, something like that. I saw Dan sitting out there the other day, and I would like to just see if there's any other people that would be willing to go there. I'm sure Dan would be willing to do it again. Maybe he wouldn't after his experience, but I have a feeling he would be.
Well, I certainly would be willing to support it. I don't know how much time I would spend there, but I would issue flyers, and I would try to, you know, encourage hot soup to be available on occasion. And
yeah,
we
like
could do it again.
Like,
you know, it wasn't successful last time, but now there's a lot. I think there's a lot broader understanding of the issue.
Right.
This time could be the time that wins.
Yes, and I'd like to try to do that. So if anyone wants to, they can call me.
Okay, again, we're talking to Martha at 469-3455, and if you want to help support a renewed public protest and fast against the sleeping ban or to establish safe sleeping zones, give a call to Martha, again, at 469-3455.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
And we'll be talking to you later.
Hey, call again.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, activism on the air. That's how it's supposed to happen, folks. Here's another call coming in.
Hi, Robert. This is V-Man. I like the idea, actually. I was just thinking about that right before the last caller, Martha, had called in, of a renewed sleeper's vigil. I'm just curious if all those injunctions against serving soup and the injunctions that were issued back in 1996 would still be valid.
There were no injunctions issued against serving...
I thought there was one about serving, cooking, and preparing and storing food or something.
There was some kind of thing issued, but it was never enforced. It was enforced insofar as sleeping went, but it was never enforced so far as food went. That was never presented, and I don't know if it's elapsed or not, candidly. I could look into it and let you know in the next show.
Okay.
And I can try and do that, but as far as I know, since it was essentially then-Mayor Mike Rotkin's attempt to drive people away, and, of course, Catherine Byers and Celia Scott refused to go to court even to testify against it. That was another... Should have let us know that those two were, or at least Byers was not the queen of the poor people, as we sort of hoped, or
right.
The champion of the poor people.
Right. Well, I'd support the idea, and I would actually put my body out on the line at night and, you know, kind of move in at City Hall.
Wow.
So
that's great, and I would have to occasionally come and snuggle next to you. You're such a comfy guy. We should point out, V-Man, that you're doing double duty because you've been kind of keeping an eye on the radio station, right?
Yeah, I'm not by myself though. I've had help from Skidmark and some others too.
And does it look like the FCC is making idle threats again?
Yeah, they're a bunch of chumps. We're not scared of them. Fuck the FCC.
Hey.
Basically, I mean, we got more important things to worry about right now, and that is keeping the station going and, you know, keeping fresh programming on the air. I'm not worried about the FCC at all.
I'm really glad you're offering to, you know, talking about this proposal to renew the fast and renew the protest in front of City Hall.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as I said, two or three deaths in the last week? I
mean, yeah.
It's pretty incredible. I apologize to listeners that I don't have the names and reports on that. I'm hoping by next Thursday when I do a show from 6 to 8 that we can have that on the air.
Anyway, I got to get back to my wage slavery here, but I would definitely...
Wait a minute, aren't you one of those bums that never does any work?
No.
Talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.
Working people are apparently interested in the rights of poor people. This is always something that makes you kind of shiver inside a little bit when you think about it, and makes me feel kind of real good down there somewhere at the bottom, and maybe makes you feel that maybe something can be done after years and years of beating against a brick wall. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Let's hear a little of what David Silva said. He held two press conferences, one... I guess it was Wednesday before last, and that had to do with the fasts that were going on. And we've heard a little bit mentioned the progressive fast, which means in January you skip one meal, in February you skip two meals, and then in March you skip all the meals. And the rolling fast, which as I mentioned before, is you skip them for one day, call the city council at 420-5020, tell them, I'm not going to be eating, folks, or I'm not going to be sleeping, one of the two, on whatever day. You can pick a day yourself, and then after you've done that, call them back the next day and say, I did, and this is what I experienced and what I felt, and it's time, I think, for you folks to understand you cannot keep hundreds and hundreds of people in a criminal status and in a status where their safety is threatened because of violence and because of the climatic conditions. So 420-5020 is the number. If you want more information about the fast, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, give a call to that number. And if you want to join the fast, give a call to 429-5284. And if all these numbers confuse you, just remember 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and just call that number, and we'll have all those other numbers available for you. Let's hear a little bit from David Silva now, and a week or two ago. His words are as true now as they were then.
Okay.
David Silva, you called a press conference. You have San Jose Mercury News. You have channel, what, 8?
46.
46.
Yeah, cable 8.
The Sentinel, Daryl Cole. And you have several fasters here, plus some erstwhile supporters. But where are the homeless?
The homeless are fending for themselves. The homeless are having to fend for themselves. The people that are here are the people that, you know, don't have to worry about a roof over their head, that don't have to worry about food. These are people that are here for compassionate reasons.
Are you just cheap on providing hot soup? Is that the reason the homeless have not showed up at this noon meal here? I mean, this noon press conference.
No, I didn't want to exploit the homeless and bring them out just to parade them. Who I'm parading today and who I'm exploiting today are the people that are fasting.
I see. So you're bringing these two women who are doing their decent job by fasting. Well, you are just parading around with a tie and one meal a day gone. Is that right?
You can put it any way you want to, asshole.
Wait a minute. Call me Keith.
Mine will be
Elizabeth. No, all seriousness aside, I mean, all kidding aside, what should people do who are out there listening to free radio? I'm not talking about your average citizen, but those who is a free radio listener, do you suggest? What do you
420-5020, 420-5020, that's city council. If you get a person, say you want to leave a message for the entire council. If you get a machine, push one and you'll get to the entire council. Tell them to decriminalize sleeping, repeal the sleeping ban, do something to create a safe space so people can, so that when they're told to move along, there's some place for them to move along to. As long as there's no place for them to move along to, they're made criminals just by virtue of being homeless. And so we have to let city council know that we know the courts have already ruled. The only thing that's stopping us now is the police and the city council. I mean, we've got the Chamber of Commerce coming on board. We've got the Downtown Association that agrees this entire camping ordinance should be suspended. We did the neighborhood meetings last year, and all those neighborhoods said there should be a campground. There should be some place for these people to go. They all said that. But the city council has a gun to its head, and some invisible gun. I'm not sure who's holding it, but perhaps, or they're just a glacier, and they're moving at a glacial pace. And so we're turning the burners underneath that glacier and hoping it to move. Didn't mean to get on the stump there, but
no, that's good. I had some other questions, but I was captivated by your rhetoric, and so I'm trying to. Of course, there was a disappointment.
420-5020. Yeah, get up right now. If you're listening to this on the radio, get up right now and call that number. Mm-hmm. Tell them to act, and to act now, to act immediately, because people are going to die. There are people that are fasting who are willing to die for this.
But isn't the homeless issues, let me be devil's advocate for a moment, isn't the homeless issues task force taking some direction? Won't they come back with a final report in 2 months?
The homeless issues task force will be having a final report. They had an interim report, and they also, with the transition from Mayor Byers to Mayor Sugar, was promised that any proposal that they put forward would be acted upon, or at least would be agendized, but that's failed to happen. So I'm not looking to the city council being very, very serious with the Homeless Issue Task Force. The Homeless Issue Task Force is coming up with as much compromise and as much creativity as it can, and with the tried to trend the city council has shown us in the past, they will compromise that to meaninglessness.
Yep. A lot of us are afraid of that, I know. But again, playing devil's advocate, actually playing myself here, Michael Schmidt of the Chamber of Commerce came up with a very strong suggestion 2 weeks ago that there be safe sleeping zones established immediately in an email he sent to City Council, which I note they ignored because I heard no discussion about the sleeping ban at that council meeting, even though the Homeless Issues Task Force was presenting its resolution and its emergency resolution December 6th stated suspend the sleeping and camping bans pending the setting up of safe zones. 2 weeks later, last night, Michael Schmidt, after having tirelessly, I have to say, advocated before the Harvey West Association, before the Homeless Issues Task Force, and probably before numerous other groups, individuals in the Chamber of Commerce, for safe sleeping zones, specifically the county building, a parking lot near the police station, county building parking lot, police station parking lot, and parking lot number 10.
Parking structure 10, that's over there by Co-American, Bookshop Santa Cruz, and the Galleria. Levels 2 and 3, yes.
That's the ideal spot. Came out with very specific proposals, which seem very reasonable, and seem they're not used at night. They have toilet facilities available.
he said he had hoped his executive committee would authorize him to bring that directly to city council, but of course instead they said, well, clear it with every other neighborhood association in town. I mean, that kind of takes the wind out of my sails.
Well, you could say that that's what they said to him. What they said to him is that let's make this forceful. Let's not put the chamber out on a limb by itself. Let's go to all the other business associations and get the downtown association and get SCAN even to join with us. So when the chamber is telling Michael Schmidt, well, yes, we want to do this, but we want the support of SCAN. There's a shift. There's a major shift. So we have to give him credit. I would have liked to have seen them say, go ahead, Michael, go for it now. But he is going to go do that. He is having meetings right now with all these organizations.
But isn't it disingenuous? Because SCAN has already come out against this. It already supports these places. I'm sure it supports these zones. They don't need an official recommendation. Is this a way of delaying and confusing?
Somewhere between misinformed, disingenuous, and disinformed, you know, the truth of that lies, I'm sure.
Bye, John.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
So, your name is?
Robin Lieberman.
And Robin, you are fasting?
Yes.
You seem to be getting thinner here.
No, I'm not fasting at the moment.
Oh, okay.
I start fasting the last week of February and the first week of March.
And so you will, during those 2 weeks, you won't eat?
Right.
And where did you first hear about this, and how did you let Mr. Silva rope you into this? have you been preyed upon again? Is that the idea?
No, I haven't been. Actually, I'm on a progressive email list through Santa Cruz, and David Silva wrote an email, I think, to everyone that was involved in that list, and he just basically gave a whole report about all of the problems and things that were happening in with the homeless people and what was happening to them. And he said, well, the way to go about this was through a rolling fast might be a good way to get people's attention, to be able to say, look, we're abstaining from food, possibly sleep, for however long, and we are, and we're doing this for a reason, for a purpose, and maybe to get some people's attention, because a lot of people don't know about this.
And do you have any of either of your UCSC students?
Yes, I'm a UCSC student.
Do you think there are other students up there also interested in this fast?
I think they would be if they knew about it. A lot of times in Santa Cruz, you can get stuck in your own little bubble, and a lot of students just don't know what's going on a lot of the time. And David Silva just gave me a flyer, actually, that I have here, that to maybe make Xerox copies about it and post it around, because I bet you, like, Santa Cruz is such a place, and the university is such a place, you have this, like, power, this voice to be able to, you know, to really to get your point across, and to you have a voice that maybe a lot of times, for example, the homeless would not have the voice, and I think that a lot of people would be interested in it if they knew more about it.
Do you find that there are other students who've already kind of joined on board? There was an organization last year called Students Against the Sleeping Ban with, I guess, Heidi Cunningham and Kate Engstrom leading it. Any other folks on campus you've talked to who are interested in doing tabling and that sort of thing?
You know, I can think of a couple that might be if they knew more about it, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure, yeah. I'm sure there's a lot. Just need the point, like I said before, they just need to find out about it, period.
Now, if students want to help you, should they call you up and talk to you, or should they call someone else?
Yeah, me or David Silva seems to know a lot what's going on.
I mean, if they want to go out there and do some tabling, are you kind of the person to talk to on campus, or?
Yeah, I could become that person.
You want to give out your phone number for free radio, or how do you feel about that?
Yes, that's fine. I can give my phone number out.
Okay, well, if you want to help out then, and you're on campus or likely to be spending some time around there, maybe if you're at Cabrillo and you want to set up a group out there, give a call to
Robin Lieberman at 502-9308.
502-9308. 502-9308. 502-9308. That's the call to get on board with the sleeping ban repeal campaign. And also, I guess, to fast, if you want to fast. Anything you want to add, Rob?
Just that I want to get the point across to all people in my position, maybe that do have a voice, to really use it right now. This is the perfect time in your life, whatever stage you're at, to be able to make a difference. And this fast is a perfect way to go about it. I'm welcome to share any information that you want to find out about the homeless issue. And I guess that's about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a 29-year-old Negro that was a preacher with the church because he felt he wanted to do something. My story is a sad one.
It's ugly and it's harsh, about a social worker. His name was Lewis Marsh. He walked our slums and alleys, and he died there in his tracks. For one man is no army when a city turns its back. And now the streets are empty, now the streets are dark. So keep an eye on shadows and never pass the park. For the city is a jungle when the law is out of sight, and death lurks in El Barrio with the orphans of the night.
Can't remember the words in this. Come now.
There were two gangs assembled in Spanish Harlem town. The smell of blood was in the air, the challenge was laid down. With patience and with reason, he tried to save their lives. But they broke his peaceful body with their fists and feet and knives. And now the streets are empty, now the streets are dark. So keep an eye on shadows and never pass the park. For the city is a jungle when the law is out of sight, and death lurks in El Barrio with the orphans of the night. In this city of corruption, other gang wars will be fought. And as you listen to my song, your officials can be bought. So don't hide behind policemen or politicians' lies, but fight until every last dirty slum is torn down before your eyes. For now the streets are empty, and now the streets are dark. So keep an eye on shadows and never pass the park. For the city is a jungle when the law is out of sight, and death lurks in El Barrio with the orphans of the night.
Phil Oakes, early 60s, tear down the slums, but make sure you've got some place to put the people that you're tearing them down to redevelop for, even if you're calling it affordable housing. We're hoping to have on the line with us at some point Roxana Kistapache, who was fasting, and I believe she has gone off her fast, at least off the full fast. Roxanne was the only one doing a full fast, starting way back in the, after the January City Council meeting on January 12th, and now I guess she's gotten sick, and so she needs to get back some strength, and she's still keeping, I believe she's doing, now joined the progressive fast, where she's taking one meal a day, but that's still, I don't know, those chocolate milkshakes that I like so, well, not chocolate milkshakes, I would say, there's plenty of food I like that I wouldn't want to give up, and I'm impressed with people who do. Hey, if you want information about this, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We have an incoming caller.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Uncle Robert. I can't hear you on the radio, so I'm just calling in.
Oh, David, we just played a kind of very articulate presentation you gave at the press conference a couple weeks back when the media were there.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you can give us an update if you'd like.
Well, yeah, the rolling fast continues to grow. We have 55 people in rolling fast now, including we now have 7 people on the progressive fast ready to go on a full fast, and that's a growing number. As you know, we're aiming for 18 by March 1st. Mm-hmm. Anybody wants to get involved in the rolling fast, you know, call Huff, and then you can pass them on to me, right, Robert?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we do have our insurance policy. Our life insurance policy, in the form of that Safe Sleeping Zones Decriminalization of Sleep Initiative. Anybody wants to pick those up, there are several people that have some, but for sure at noon in front of City Hall on Wednesdays, you can pick some up.
I believe Dan Cooper, 2 days a week, has a schedule with the Pergolesi.
Yes,
I'm not quite sure when that is.
Those are for paid signature gatherers.
Right, if you wish to go out and actually be a part of the paid signature gathering.
Yeah, especially if you're homeless.
That's a way you can actually make money as a homeless person then.
Yeah.
Especially change homeless law or anti-homeless
law. Or if you're a starving student.
A starving student.
But if you're just a volunteer, we like to try to get a lot of free signatures too. So you can pick those up from several people. Now there's up at the university, Robin Lieberman has several clipboards and petitions. I don't know if I can give her number out on the air just now, or did she give it out last week?
She gave it out.
Yeah, so it's 502-9308. University, most people can't mostly hear us, but you know, if you're a student, you can hear us.
Give it out again, could you, David?
502-9308. Mm-hmm.
And if you forget any of these numbers, 423-HUFF.
Yeah, that's
earlier
there.
I gave out your number, David, suggesting that those who wanted to join the FAST
sure.
could call, but
it's okay.
Sounds like you want to route them through HUFF, right?
Well, yeah, you know, I had so many bad experiences with the hate-free zone, so many, you know, this is probably different. I probably won't get a lot of hate calls and so forth.
Well, also, you yourself are now only taking one meal a day, right?
Yeah, just breakfast. Yes.
I hope it's a hearty breakfast, David.
I'm eating very healthily. I lost 18 pounds in January, but only 3 pounds so far in February, and I gained a couple pounds the past couple days, actually.
Wow. You're not taking snacks on the sly, are you?
Huh? No, Robert, I'm being very, very strict with myself.
I want to let you know, since you haven't been listening, that a woman named Martha Hollis called in. She was the inspiration for the Common Action Veterans Hall Forum back in October that had so many people talking.
Oh, Common Action, yeah.
And that different the things that SCAN doesn't cover, you know.
Yeah, right.
And she was saying she wanted to join Dan Hopkins, and so did Vinny the V-Man, in a renewed protest at City Hall that would go 24 hours a day.
Yeah, Dan did a 24-hour fast, as I think yesterday was reported on.
He called
free
in
about radio.
That, just a few hours, a few minutes
he
ago.
He did 24 hours without food, water, or sleep, or coffee, or sugar, or anything, you know, from 11 to 11, you know, breaking. Of course, he didn't cover himself up with a blanket. He actually weathered wind chill factor. Everybody that's doing the rolling fast is, you know, doing it in their own little way, whether it's from food or sleep. Dan has joined the progressive fast. He's what we got down is a slow progressive fast. In other words, he's going to be doing Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple people that are going to be doing Saturdays. Some people that are on chemotherapy are just going to be doing Saturdays because that's when they don't do chemo.
Mm-hmm.
There's two of us on HIV meds that are on the progressive fast too. So it's a growing thing. I was not able to rally the energy to go to the Gay Catholics Friday and make my pitch there, but I'll hit them next month.
Well, you know,
and also we're going to have a feast. Now, I'm not too sure exactly when this is. Probably going to be the first Saturday in March. For all those who participate in the Rolling Fast, those of us that will be eating no meals will be serving you a feast. It's going to be a vegan meal, and Laura Wilson is going to be preparing that, Carl Wilson's daughter.
Well, there better be some chocolate available there.
Well, we'll see what we can do. But, Robert, I understand that your participation in the Rolling Fast is that you've given up sugar.
Well, it's true. Sugar and I have always had sort of an uneasy relationship.
I'm talking about sugar.
Yes.
Azúcar.
Yes, you're talking about the white death, as we put it.
You know, the thing that you put in your 11 cups of coffee every morning.
Right, instead of sniffing it up your nose, you wolf it down your system.
So, that's one benefit for us all,
Robert.
For three weeks, I've been without sugar. Sugar is a benefit to us all.
But some say I'm getting more and more sour, so I don't know.
Sour? Well...
I wanted to let you know, David, that you probably didn't hear it. Martha, the woman I mentioned about the Common Action thing, she has, as I said, she's decided to do this. She wants to organize this protest in front of City Hall, and she's given a phone number, 469-3455.
469-3455?
For folks to call in, yeah.
Sure.
Plus, I guess, Becky just mentioned to me that the SCAN, that group...
What's her name again?
Martha Hollis.
Martha Hollis.
SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, the group that elected the current city council, and the group that for 3 or 4 years running has made it a part of its, endorsements to end the sleeping ban.
Yeah.
Is having a meeting at 6:30 on Thursday for endorsements, and I guess they will have to decide whether they're going to come forward and do something with all these council members who have essentially broken the SCAN pledge on this.
Yeah. We're going to have a table there for the Rolling Fast and for the petition drive. I'm hoping that this is going to be on the agenda, or the safe sleeping zones part of it at least is going to be on the agenda, but I haven't heard whether that cleared the steering committee or not. I wasn't at the steering committee meeting. I don't go to steering committee meetings usually. I just go to the housing committee meetings when I'm up to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that SCAN got sort of fooled, I guess, on this Dolphin Lee when it passed. In essence, it passed the Dolphin Lee as a number of proposals saying we don't want to endorse specifically the Dolphin Lee, but they were kind of coaxed into putting it onto their endorsement thing in very detailed form. And then Catherine Byers, of course, rammed it through in November. I guess I'm wondering, are they going to back away from safe sleeping zones too? Is SCAN going to give up its demand there?
No, as a matter of fact, I thought that the joint meeting with the SCAN Housing and Steering Committee with the Chamber of Commerce, where the Chamber of Commerce was calling their proposal safe sleeping zones.
Uh-huh.
It's actually a proposal for safe sleeping places. It has nothing to do with any, you know.
And only for vehicles, actually.
Yeah, and only for vehicles and only for women and children and disabled.
Very limited.
So it's limited, and so it's not a safe sleeping zone proposal, and SCAN was very, very skeptical. At the same time, we want to get behind any positive move in the right direction, but we're not going to be fooled.
Sure. I mean, I know.
Let's not be fooled. Okay,
I mean,
Robert?
I wanted to see SCAN, you know, censor the people that it endorsed that were not taking up, like Fitzmaurice and Byers, who turned on Sugar and Crone when they tried to put some teeth into that thing last year. Now, of course, it's Sugar and Crone who aren't doing anything. None of them are doing anything. What's the answer, David? Should we simply offer them some chocolate cream pies?
I think the answer is, you know, to continue the pressure on all fronts as much as possible. The fasting, get those signatures on the petitions. You know, even though we have may read from somewhere or hear from the city clerk that we have July 17th or something for our deadline. Our true deadline is absolutely May 27th. So we want to get those petitions in by May 15th.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty small, only 3.5 months, folks. So try to show up Wednesday at noon. I'm going to be weak, but I'll still will be there to hand out petitions. And I'm not going to stay there the whole hour like I usually do. I'm just going to stay there half an hour and hand out petitions. So let's get all those signatures in. I know we can do it, and I know the people will vote for it. And this will be like our life insurance policy.
And again, if you want to join the fast, give a call to 423-HUFF.
Yes.
We're talking to David Silva.
Thank you very much, Uncle Robert.
Don't get too thin, David.
No, I'm doing yoga and everything now. I'm getting real healthy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Song called On My Way.
Well, sometimes I am happy, sometimes sad, thinking of the good times I have had, thinking of the places I have been, sometimes down, sometimes up, sometimes in. On my way to another working day, on my way, and I wish that I could stay on my way, but I have no time to play, and I hope that I will see you on my way. And I got me a job in Buffalo, and it's cold when those chilly lake winds blow, and it's hot when the steel furnace glows. It was dirty when the steel smoke rose. On my way, so forth. Well, then California called me for a while, and the sun was shining every single mile. It was getting so darn crowded I could cry, crossing land and sea, falling from the sky. And I've been all along the southern shore, and the people there were looking mighty poor. They was waiting for the factories to arrive, and some of them were fighting to survive. Yes, I've been all up and down the line, but somehow my money stayed behind. A good paying job is hard to find, and the graveyard's looking for another sign. On my way to another working day, on my way, and I wish that I could stay on my way, but I have no time to play, and I hope that I will see you on my way.
And now we're going to go back to the Tuesday Board of Supervisors. We've talked a bit about the Steve Argue case. Steve, a homeless activist, jailed for punching a police officer, for 9 months jailed, as the police officer was putting in a brutal pain compliance hold a woman named Julianne and her child in a largely peaceful protest, boisterous but peaceful, at the May 22nd fundraiser downtown, which was... the protests concerned the bombing of Yugoslavia, and there was a big brouhaha about that for a number of months. Argue was jailed, convicted and then jailed, and actually a little of both, and he's, I guess, now in the third month of his sentence, or is it the second? He doesn't get out till June, and then again, about a week ago, actually a week ago Saturday, he was beaten in his cell by Officer Zamora, by his account. A number of us went down to protest, and this is the County Board of Supervisors. You'll hear some of the speeches that were made there.
Good morning. Hi, I'm Becky Johnson. I spoke to your board just 1 week ago. I told you that the prisoners in Santa Cruz County Jail do not have sufficient blankets or food. I told you that Steve Argue has been in solitary confinement because he refused to give up his blanket to the jailhouse authorities. My most reasonable request for you to meet the basic minimal needs of those who have been incarcerated, the right to stay warm, the right to have sufficient food to eat, and the right to not be penalized for seeking redress of those grievances, has apparently been met with indifference on your part and violence on the part of personnel at Santa Cruz County Jail. You may have read in your Morning Sentinel an article, group protests, alleged abuses. It's interesting to read in here Sheriff Tracy's comments that the incident of a violent attack on Steve Argue in the county jail has been met with this statement from Sheriff Tracy. He says, according to this article, it was investigated, and as the sheriff, I am satisfied he was not the victim of undue or unnecessary force. There was no evidence that substantiated his claim of excessive force. Now, I want you to note in the same article that he does refer to a nurse having examined Argue after what he calls euphemistically the incident. And I think that when a person is violently beaten in handcuffs, had their head slammed against a wall by a jail guard when they're in handcuffs and dragged down the wall down the hall by their hair, I wouldn't call that an incident. I would call that a violent assault. But Sheriff Tracy does confirm that the nurse did verify that there was some redness on his arms where the handcuffs had been placed, and also one on his calves. Now, back to the blankets. Thank you for interrupting me to tell me that. The blanket, Tracy says that, this is just jabberwocky time, where Tracy says the inmates in one of the jail's units are provided an extra blanket because of intermittent heating problems. In the unit that Argue was in, most of the prisoners had two blankets, and a few people had three blankets. When they came to take his third blanket away, he refused and was placed in solitary.